Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's your last chance. Menards 11% rebate ends soon. Wrap up those big projects before the holidays. Weatherproof in style with new Mastercraft exterior doors. Customize your kitchen with Clearview cabinetry. It's time to pick up those new appliances or start your big garage project. Don't miss out. The 11% rebate ends Thanksgiving. Stores closed Thanksgiving Day. 11% mail-in rebate is a merchandise credit check. Good on future in-store purchases. See Menards. Menards.com for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, here we are up here smoking and joking, and then all of a sudden I hear the music. Oh, man, we got a show to do. I better turn on the microphones here. Hey, Montana Farm Bureau, 105th annual meeting convention taking place right now, right downstairs from our Montana Talk studios. We're going to have the General Counsel for the American Farm Bureau Federation join us here later this hour. Plus, John Jackson, the Joker from X, is going to be with us here in a few minutes as well. But first up, Senator-elect Tim Sheehy just spoke to the Farm Bureau and popped up to our studios. Senator-elect, great to see you.
Thanks for having me back. Always good to best view in town.
Does it feel weird to be called Senator-elect yet?
It sure does.
Yeah. I saw the photo of you and your wife, your lovely wife Carmen, both of you are combat veterans, in front of your new office in Washington, D.C. You already went back for orientation, and I had to give you a hard time, as fellow veterans would do. Did people think you guys were like the college interns?
Yeah, they definitely, every time we try to enter the building, you know, they'd want us to go through the staff line and, you know, think we're visitors or interns. But, yeah, hopefully they figured it out. But it was an interesting visit and definitely felt the gravity of the situation, but also felt you could just feel the winds change. I mean, there was a decisive mandate that we got on November 5th from coast to coast. You know, all races, colors, creeds, socioeconomic classes spoke clearly. They rejected this campaign of deception that was run nationwide. I mean, the Democrats ran on deception. I mean, now we're finally seeing what Kamala Harris was paying these celebrities, you know, millions of dollars to support her, because even they wouldn't come out and support her. Whereas Trump had celebrities doing this as the right thing. And, of course, you know, we had the same thing here in Montana, grassroots support. So America spoke. And it's going to be fun these next couple years getting a lot of stuff done.
Well, I imagine the farmers and ranchers downstairs, many of them are just breathing a sigh of relief right now because the Trump tax cuts. If the Trump tax cuts went away, that would have meant big, massive implications for farmers and ranchers, not to mention the rest of us.
I mean, the litany of issues that I mean, any business owner, you got to remember farmers and ranchers are business owners by definition, is breathing a sigh of relief because, number one, tax cuts and job tax. That's easy. You know, right off the bat, that's going to be extended, hopefully, you know, enshrined in some degree of permanence. You know, second, regulations. We've seen a regulatory environment unleashed to an extreme degree these last 3.5 years. And of course, in the farming ranching world, that is terribly impacting them, whether it's, you know, taking our public lands, moving them into conservation, whether it's, you know, expanding the environmental regulations for tractors and farm equipment, raising the cost of doing business. I mean, the list goes on. So I think that they're breathing a sigh of relief that the regulatory environment is going to shift in their favor, the tax environment is going to shift in their favor, and obviously foreign policy. Our economy is stronger when we have foreign policy that puts America first, American businesses first, American farmers first. And they know that's what they're going to get with President Trump.
20 seconds before the break, how would you sum up your first few days in Washington as the senator-elect?
Got a lot of work to do.
A lot of work to do, but I bet it's nice to see some new, fresh blood back there.
Did
you get a sense of that from some of the other folks?
Who absolutely.
Are like, finally, some reinforcements are on deck.
Yep, a lot of work to do, but we're optimistic.
All right. Well, we'll talk more with Senator-elect Tim Sheehy right after the break. He's joining us for a few more minutes before he heads back downstairs to the Montana Farm Bureau Federation 105th annual meeting. And then we'll chat with the Joker, take your phone calls and more after that.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Senator-elect Tim Sheehy in the house with us here for just a few minutes. Tim, I was just saying, man, I loved your response when it comes to your support for Tulsi Gabbard to serve as Director of National Intelligence. She's a fellow combat veteran. Pete Hegseth, who President Trump is nominating for Secretary of Defense, a fellow combat veteran. And yet you have people like Whoopi Goldberg and some of these others saying, oh, Pete Hegseth doesn't know anything about the military. They're saying that Trump's nominees aren't qualified, and you just punched right back at them here.
I actually wrote that myself. You know, that wasn't some, consultant there. I wrote that one myself. And the reason was is last week I was in D.C. for my first week on the job and getting interrogated every time you turn a corner by reporters, and obviously the subject of discussion was the cabinet nominees and, you know, the characterization that the establishment and the media, especially, you know, our favorite friends, you know, the New York Times, WAPO, Atlantic, and CNN is all the characterization of these nominees is they're extreme, they're unqualified, you know, this is terrible, this is a danger to democracy. And, you know, especially when it comes to someone like Tulsi Gabbard, who I know personally, I've known her for years. Carmen and I were both on active duty station in Hawaii when she was elected to Congress. And even though she was a Democrat at the time, you could tell this was a very intelligent, driven, smart woman who was a heavyweight. Like, she was not screwing around. This was going to be somebody who was going to get things done, and always had her level of respect for her. And the way that, you know, as soon as, you know, a woman of color, combat veterans nominated for the highest intelligence position in the land, if a Democrat had nominated her, the press would be lauding it as a historic moment for women of color, historic moment of equality. But, of course, Trump nominates her, and they are just bashing her as unqualified, a Russian. She's accused of being a Russian spy. What a disgrace by these reporters who literally are function as agents of foreign governments trying to destroy our country. They're going to accuse someone like Tulsi Gabbard, a combat veteran, of being a foreign agent. So I just had enough of that. That's why I wrote that press release. And I said, here's a party who's nominated, a cross-dressing kleptomaniac, to run our nuclear energy portfolio in the Department of Energy, highest level of security clearance. And then, of course, we have a transgender health and human services deputy secretary who's advocating for child mutilation and transition surgery for kids, taxpayer funded, of course. And they're going to call Tulsi Gabbard an extreme, unqualified candidate. Unacceptable. So I called it out for what it was, which is total BS, and it's unacceptable.
Do you think that Washington, and that you were just back there for a few days, and more particularly that your fellow, now soon to be fellow Republican senators, do they understand how big of a mandate that you just received, that they just received, that President Trump just received, and how big of a mandate they received to carry out this America First agenda?
Yeah, no question. I think across the board, even senators that, and we have to remember, some of these senators that are more middle of the road, you also have to remember they represent states that are that way. They wouldn't get elected if they weren't. So in defense of folks like Susan Collins, who get a lot of flack from the right. Susan Collins is the only Republican who will ever be elected in Maine. That's just a fact. That's a blue state. And as soon as, she decides not to run again, we're probably not going to have a Republican backfill. So when the votes really matter, she's there for the party, as are some of these other moderates. But they have to be able to get elected in their state. So we have to remember that. But everyone's on board. And I even talked to Susan while I was there, and she's on board. Everyone realizes the mandate was given, that the highest popular vote ever gotten by a Republican president, electoral landslide, House, Senate, it's time to get things done. And the most important thing I can do as a newly elected senator is help strap rocket boosters to the America First agenda and just get things done as fast as we can.
The biggest concern a lot of people have right now is what do they do between now and January 20th, that these next 2 months? I mean, does Joe Biden potentially have us on the brink of World War III? Is he going to do some last-minute land designations?
Well, I don't know if you were following the blow-by-blow last night late, but Chuck Schumer is trying to jam through a whole docket of left-wing judicial nominees, just trying to jam it through at the last minute. So I think, frankly, the next 2 months, we're going to be playing defense, and I think, John Thune, obviously, as a new Republican leader last night, was doing a great job kind of playing parliamentary defense to make sure that Schumer wasn't able to use these back doors to sneak judicial nominees through. So, we'll see. But I think the most important thing is the next couple months is really to try to make sure we don't let any last-minute tricks get snuck under the rug on the way out.
Yeah, I saw that Fox News headline, Senate GOP initiates Thune-engineered slowdown as Schumer looks to stack judicial votes. Yep. It's these left-wing federal judges that have been killing the timber industry in Montana, going after ag, going after oil, gas, and coal. And so that's where we have new opportunity with new blood like you being in there to get some newer federal judges on the bench.
That's exactly right. And, a lot of folks don't realize that's a key role of senators is, you know, the U.S. attorneys, the judges, making sure that our judicial responsibilities adhere to the Constitution. And that's one of the most insidious efforts that we've seen come from the left in America here these past, you know, decades, but really especially the last few years, is a very concerted effort to, I mean, we heard of, they want to pack the Supreme Court, they want to reform the Supreme Court, that they've tried to place from Soros-funded DAs all the way through, you know, appointed U.S. attorneys and district judges, a very active judicial activism play to basically put these left-wing attorneys and judges in place. So that's a very important role of the Senate, is to be a filter on that, to make sure that, listen, I don't want a Republican judge. I don't want a Democrat judge. I want a judge or an attorney that's going to adhere to the Constitution of the United States. That is their job. And I will wait to be judged by the Constitution and by God, but that is the job of an attorney and a judge. And that's what we need to prioritize.
You know, it was crazy. I was there 2:30 in the morning on election night, or the election next day, next morning. That's when you gave your speech. Two nights later, you're at the Montana Family Foundation. Now you're at the Montana Farm Bureau. You haven't even gotten a break yet. Nope, no breaks yet. The only easy day was, well, was it yesterday? Was it 2 years ago? I don't know.
When yeah, was it? I don't know. Yeah, who knows? But yeah, no, I mean, I've been hired for a job. As I tell people, the Montana's hired me to do a job, and I'm going to do the best I possibly can. Whether I get reelected or not, whether I'm the most popular or not, I'm going to do what's right for our state and for our country, and that means getting to work right away.
Senator-elect Tim Sheehy, great to see you here in studio. I'm sure we'll see you much more to come here in the days and months ahead. Great to see you. Thanks
all
for
right.
popping in.
Thanks for having me.
All right, he's heading back down to the Montana Farm Bureau annual meeting. We've got John Jackson, the Joker from X, in the house, and a caller on the line. Is it Denny Rehberg? How do you pronounce it? Denny Rehberg on the phone lines. Former congressman. We'll get to his call, too.
Taking your calls live. 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
John Jackson, the Joker from X, in the house with us as well here. Typically joins us every Tuesday. And we've got phone lines open. In fact, former Montana Congressman Denny Rehberg called in on the phone line. So we'll hear from Denny here in just a second. But, John, first off, yeah, this was, I think, you don't like to go to too many public events, etc. You keep a low profile as a retired federal law enforcement officer, but you just got to meet Senator-elect Tim Sheehy, I think, for the first time. Anyway, what did you think about what he had to say here this morning?
Well, we talked earlier about the Tyson fight and how him coming down, walking down to the ring, you could see what was in his eyes. You could see that dread. Well, meeting Tim Sheehy personally, I can see the steel in his eyes. I can see this. I can hear the steel in his words. It sure sounds like the guy is ready to go up there and maybe, you know, put a few Navy SEAL rear naked chokes on some of these people and ready to do the job. It sounds like he's just got that mindset. You can see it in every how he presents himself. He's got that mindset. He's going to go up there and first and foremost push through all of Donald Trump. Nominees.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got the warrior ethos. But also, I think if he didn't know who the enemy was a little over a year ago when he first entered into this fight, boy, he knows who the enemy is now, because they pulled out all the stops they could to try to falsely attack this guy, to try to undermine this guy. I mean, $175 million was thrown against him, and he just fought back against it all.
How do you survive? How does anyone survive that? The entire system, $175 million coming at you, where they can turn anybody here. Him and his wife are, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Captain America, and they still brand them as shady, Sheehy, just all this cheesy crap. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that really should be against the law, but unfortunately we have freedom of speech here and they get away with it.
Well, yeah, it was, well, and it was funny too, because it was like their attacks against him only strengthened him, and the little name calling they did only made him more popular. Yep. and made his campaign even stronger, kind of like, and I think it's because people saw all the BS attacks against Donald Trump and they just finally saw through it once and for all, and they're like, wait a minute, we saw how good things were. We know how good things could be. Former Montana Congressman Denny Rehberg with us on the phone lines as well. Hey, Denny, great to hear from you.
Well, I just wanted to thank the Joker for not suggesting I'm the Tyson of this fight, because I'm 59 years old and a has been. I wouldn't go up against Sheehy if he had both arms tied behind his back. I've had some really good days lately. Things are good on the Reberg Ranch. Tim Sheehy winning. You know, I ran against Chester in 2012. We set records. We both spent $25 million, so there wasn't a differential between the two of us. So we spent $50 million total, and I lost it on election day. The Republicans learned a lesson. Don't quit until be prepared for the early voting and the same day registration and voting, because that's what got me. I was ahead in 9 out of 10 polls and lost the election. So, Sheehy, everything he said on your program this morning, I hope your listeners were listening very intently, because he's absolutely right. And I can guarantee things changed when John Tester beat Conrad Burns. I had to work with Tester and Senator Baucus, and it was miserable being in the Congress trying to head off our own senators from the state of Montana, and Tim Sheehy's going to be phenomenal. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, and these federal judges, you've seen it. Like you could pass all the good laws in Washington you want. We could pass all the good laws in Helena we want. But these left-wing federal judges that were put on the bench by Baucus and Tester, I mean, they're the ones attacking oil, gas, coal, ag, and everything.
Well, the good news is a lot of the Baucus people who he trained and put on the bench are retiring as well. And we're going to have an opportunity to fill those slots with people that understand the Constitution that will be fair. I also want to do a shout-out for Farm Bureau. I was on the committee that brought it to Billings for the first time, literally 26 years ago. And we were sitting in the, at that time, the Sheridan Hotel. I had a brand new baby. I brought the baby to the committee meeting. Everybody still gives me a hard time about that. She's now 26, a neonatal nurse in Omaha with a 2-year-old and an 11-week-old baby. So that's how long they've been coming to Billings. But I just want to thank Farm Bureau, because I joined them in 1978. They've been there since 78 for me personally on my farm and ranch. And they're literally the voice.
And I thought I was a young buck watching Mike Tyson fights in the 80s. You were still technically young back then. Well, Congressman Danny Reber, great to hear from you. And we're going to catch up again real soon. And our listeners get a chance to hear more from you here in a couple of weeks for sure, if not later this week. So thanks for calling in. Great to hear from you. John Jackson, the Joker from X. What else do you want to share? Thanks again for sticking around. Because, yeah, I wasn't sure if Tim Sheehy was going to drop in, and we're going to have a Farm Bureau guest join us here in just a few minutes as well.
Well, we talked to Sheehy at the break about, you know, who would be the best FBI director, and I had a great news piece. It pops up. They throw out these guys on the left-wing news networks, and this former FBI agent, Daniel Brunner, said the other day on one of the networks that if nominated, Kash Patel would do massive damage to the interior of the agency as director. Well, how fast can we get him on there, Aaron?
What a ringing endorsement.
Can we just go ahead and just put him on there, just appoint him with an executive order? Let's do that right away.
Well, and didn't I say it? That what you mentioned the FBI, you mentioned cabinet appointees, and I said, what about Kash Patel for FBI? Kash Patel would be great. Actually, Kash Patel called into Montana Talks. I had Kash Patel on this show. And he was, you know, endorsing Tim Sheehy for the U.S. Senate here in Montana because he understood how important the Senate is to clean up this rot in this Department of Injustice back in Washington, D.C. And Kash Patel, a lot of people may not know much about him, but, you know, he played a key role in the Trump administration. But even before that, he was like the DOJ, the Justice Department guy at JSOC, the Joint Special Operations Command. So he literally was the DOJ guy working right there, you know, very closely with the best of the best of our American warriors in the military. And so he understands the DOJ, he understands foreign policy and so much more.
We need guys exactly like that to go into these places truly like a bull in a china shop. We know these places are corrupt and political activists. I mean, all the way to deep down into their upper and into their middle management. And you got to have people go in there that are not part of the system, not anyone like this guy, Mike Rogers, that they're floating out there for FBI. Hell no. You have to have a disruptor that goes in there and tells them day one, this is not business as usual. All you people that were involved in business as usual over these last 8 years, get out.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that you and I talked about this earlier, there was another story here. Politico had the report. Politico is quoting a prominent Democrat, where this prominent Democrat says this. This is a DNC committee man, Joseph Paolino Jr. He said this to Politico. The progressive wing of the party has to recognize, we all have to recognize, the country's not progressive and not to the far left or the far right. They're in the middle. He said this. He says, I don't want to be the freak show party. I think what he's referring to here is their like cult-like push for this woke DEI transgender agenda. That's, we all know what he's referring to, right? And that's why they don't want Pete Hegseth to be the Secretary of Defense, because he will spell the end of this woke BS that's destroying our military right now.
That's what a lot of people really don't talk about. You're dead on the point there, Aaron. Everybody talks about, you know, the most public outrages that we've seen for the last 8 years come from the DOJ, the FBI. But nobody really talks about this behemoth in the background of the DOD. Not only just heinous waste, fraud, and abuse of taxpayer money, but now in the Joe Biden era, actively acting as left-wing advocates over there when they're supposed to be war fighters.
Yeah, this is what, let's see, who was it? Kaylee McGee said this about Pete Hegseth and why the establishment and why the left is trying to do everything they can to oppose Pete Hegseth for Secretary of Defense.
I think that the Pentagon is legitimately scared of Pete Hegseth because of his opposition to DEI. Keep in mind, the Defense Department is spending around $86 billion right now on various DEI initiatives. And as someone whose brother has served in the Navy for almost a decade, that's insulting to me. It doesn't make any sense why my brother should be required to sit in trainings about white rage and about how he can be a better soldier by keeping his white supremacy in check, when all he does is dutifully serve his country honorably. And Pete Hegseth wants to root that out. I think that's a very noble aim, and I think that the opposition does stem towards his opposition to those states.
So white rage, John, I think that should be your fight name. I think you should fight in the fusion fights. And in the red corner, John White Rage Jackson.
I'm the Bugs Bunny character, if you ever saw the one. And the Crusher, you know. But you know how this is not abstract, Aaron. We are not thinking these things could be, they might be. No, we watched this for Trump's entire presidency, as these people that Trump, you know, through just kindness and maybe a little bit of gullibility, left in place. You saw how they sabotaged him and ratted him out at every opportunity. All these people got to go.
Yeah, in 2017, when Trump took office, he tried to extend an olive branch. He gave the fig leaf. He tried to work with some of these people and say, hey, come on, let's work together. Let's help. Let's all work together to make America great again. And no, they had to backstab him. They had to undermine him every chance they could. And so now he's going in with eyes wide open as to who the snakes are and who America's friends truly are and who's just looking out for themselves. But it's kind of fun to see some of these people come groveling back, like Joe Scarborough and Mika. Just want to have a cup of coffee.
Just bend the knee. We're here to bend the knee.
Where's that ring we need to kiss?
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
A very unexpected move out of Washington, D.C. yesterday, as the Senate Agriculture Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow, a Michigan Democrat, unveiled a nearly 1,400-page farm bill proposal aimed at passing before her retirement at the year's end. Titled the Rural Prosperity and Food Security Act, it includes $39 billion in new funding to support farmers, rural communities, and nutrition programs, emphasizing climate-smart practices and disaster relief. But the release caught many off guard, underscored by the absence of reactions from farm and ranch groups and even Senate colleagues. With limited time and Republican resistance, prospects for passage of a farm bill appear very slim this year. U.S. Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas is the current ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee. He posted on Twitter, quote, an 11th-hour partisan proposal released 415 days after the expiration of the current farm bill is insulting. He added, America's farmers deserve better, end quote. Again, that's a statement from Senator John Bozeman, the current ranking member, but he will become the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee once the new Congress gets underway next year. Also, President-elect Donald Trump has yet to name a nominee for Secretary of Agriculture. We'll continue to track that here on The Report. I'm Lee Northline.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, you know, we've been talking about just what a new sheriff back in town will mean for Washington, D.C. In fact, John Jackson, the Joker from X, sidekicking with us a little bit here this morning. You remember our conversations about the Chevron decision and just how huge that is, where the U.S. Supreme Court here recently said, wait a minute, no federal government. You don't just get to make any decisions you want to make. Unless Congress wrote a law telling you you can do that, you don't just get to go now lecture the American people about what they can and can't do. It's a huge case with, you know, hopefully huge ramifications here with the inbound Trump administration.
Oh, monstrous. And you saw, I want to say, if our counselor here might remember better than me, but there was two cases, I believe in 2022, where you had the Supreme Court came down that same way against the EPA on one and against the ATF on another, saying those same things in both of those precedents. You can't do this. The Congress has to do it. And finally, then, back in the summer of this year, they rule on the big one, the Chevron case.
The Chevron case. Yeah, Travis Cushman is the Deputy General Counsel for the American Farm Bureau Federation. Welcome to Montana. Good to see you.
Thank you so much. Great to be here. And that's a great memory of the ATF case. It was actually everyone, if you read about the media, everyone thought this was a big Second Amendment case. Nothing to do with the Second Amendment. It was an administrative law. What is the powers of the president? And in that case, it was actually the Trump administration. They passed a law that the ATF had no right to do. It was for Congress to do. And the Supreme Court overturned it. The media went crazy saying this is a horrific Second Amendment case. It wasn't mentioned at all. It had nothing to do with the Second Amendment. It was administrative law.
Well, wasn't there now? There was another case that just this week where the environmental groups filed a lawsuit, and they ended up in maybe undermining one of their biggest arguments ever. It was a land management case, right?
So it was a NEPA case.
Yeah.
NEPA is an environmental statute, which basically requires all federal agencies to go through this environmental review process before they do anything. And the environmental groups are challenging an action involving flight paths. But the D.C. Circuit said, hey, actually, it turns out this entire NEPA regime may be done entirely inappropriately. The CEQ in the administration has been putting out these regs they had no authority to do, and it threw them all out.
Yeah, and so really, like, now they might have undermined this tool that they've used to try to justify all sorts of environmental overreach. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out as well.
It's very ironic that they were trying to strengthen some environmental issues, and they ended up maybe entirely undermining their position.
So what's your main message here as you talk with Montana farmers and ranchers from your perch at the American Farm Bureau headquarters on some of the big legal challenges you guys are facing, at least in the last 3.5-4 years, and then on the flip side, kind of the opportunities in the months ahead?
Exactly. The key issue is, you know, what we're doing at AFBF for farmers and ranchers across the country, particularly in Montana, through the courts, and really going into why the courts matter so much. I think when most people think of Washington, Farm Bureau, at least in D.C., they really focus on the lobbying in the administration and in the Congress. But so much goes on in the courts. So much big legal issues are decided in the courts. And that's where Farm Bureau has had a huge presence. We've been very influential. There's been some huge changes, like you mentioned, on the Chevron deference. But we're involved in lots of other cases. I filed more cases this past year than we ever have before. We have several involving BLM, management issues out here in Montana. Montana Farm Bureau has been a huge advocate, a huge help with us in those cases. It's been a fantastic partner, and it's telling folks all about that.
Yeah, John, that's something we obviously play close attention to here in Montana. You know, public lands in public hands. It's one of our like slogans where we're like, oh, come on. The very people who lecture us about public lands in public hands, they always want to take away our access. You know, it's these radical environmental groups and others who lecture us about public lands, but then try to strip away our access.
I was telling you the other day, like the area where my cabin is, they designate north of this one highway that's a grizzly recovery area. So that what does that do to your public land access is that you can't get up there, but only certain times of the year in motorized vehicles. It's the left that is constantly taking away your land access. It's not the right.
Yeah, and Travis Cushman, kind of on that front, one thing I talked about earlier this morning, I ran into Rebecca Colnar and Nicole Rolfe, the Senior Director of Government Affairs for the Montana Farm Bureau, this public lands rule that the Biden administration has been pushing. Wyoming Senator John Barrasso was in Billings, Montana with Senator-elect Tim Sheehy a few weeks ago, and I like the way John Barrasso summed up their public lands rule. He said, you know, these are multiple-use public lands, but what they're doing now with their new public lands rule, no use is their preferred use.
Exactly. Yes, if I put it any better, it is incredibly odd that for multiple use, now the administration is saying a non-use is a use. They're calling it conservation. What they mean is not using the land. That means that ranchers are going to have to start competing with conservation groups for their own kinds of non-use conservation easements.
And we've already seen here in Montana, we've seen this type of, you know, basically discrimination take place against American ranchers already, where the Bureau of Land Management under eco-terrorist Tracy Stone Manning has given special perks and favors to basically a radical environmental group known as the American Prairie Reserve, the APR, at the expense of American ranchers, where they're deliberately trying to help kick the ranchers off the land, but yet give these environmental groups control over the lands.
I haven't been following the issue exactly, but I'm sure Nicole will inform me about it later on today. I'm excited to hear more about that.
Yeah, yeah. What are some of the other big legal battles you guys have been facing? It's, as you talk about filing more lawsuits in the last year than, you know, several years previous, we've heard a similar deal from our attorney general here in Montana. I mean, he's filed 51-plus lawsuits going after this federal overreach. What are some of the other big legal battles you're facing in addition to this public lands rule?
So we've got between 25 and 30 cases right now, about 15 brand-new ones. A public lands rule is obviously one of them. We've also are getting involved in a case in which environmental groups are attempting to make every BLM allotment go through a NEPA review process, which would allow them then to challenge every single rancher every time it gets an allotment easement. So we are trying to fight against that. There's been several new rules from the EPA and Department of Transportation, which attempt to essentially wipe out all gas vehicles and electrify the entire fleets. They are claiming that they're just regulating the tailpipe emissions of cars. But the only way to comply with these regulations is not have a tailpipe. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So those are three lawsuits right there. We're always suing California, it seems like, for their overreach. Actually, Nicole Rolfe was very helpful for me in fighting the SEC's climate disclosure rule the past couple of years. She was a huge asset. John Tester actually was a huge help with us there.
Oh, really?
Well.
He actually helped out on that one. Okay.
John Tester was very helpful fighting against the SEC rule there. And we won. The SEC agreed to take out the Scope 3 climate disclosure that we really didn't like. And so what California did is they've kind of come on the backside and said, all right, well, any big business that does business in California, you need to do the exact same thing. So that means every single business that's large has some foothold in California. What they would do then is require all these businesses to start tracking all emissions down their supply chain. So if you're a rancher, that would mean that you might have to, for every pound of beef you sell, say, all right, these are how much eight greenhouse gases went into producing that pound of beef.
Yeah, that's interesting. John, I don't know if you saw this story. I think the Daily Caller had a story the other day where because of what California is pushing with their emissions controls, several RVs would be banned in several states, California, Oregon, Washington, and a handful of others. And of course, you know, my response to that is outrageous as that is, because it's frankly un-American what they are doing. But it's also like, well, we got great RV dealers here in Montana that can pick up that business if California doesn't want to sell it. But it's outrageous that this is what's been happening here, undermining American industry and business.
So actually what these EPA's rules would do is they prohibit the manufacturers from making those vehicles in the first place. And that's terrifying. I mean, think like if you need to transport your cattle, it requires a big truck. Big trucks can't operate on battery power. You'd be needing to constantly stop, recharge. They'd be too heavy. You're transporting less cattle at that point on a hot day. Thinking about cattle, like you can't be stopping every 30 minutes to recharge your batteries.
Yeah, that would be crazy. I remember they did some studies on these EV pickups, and like there's a guy in Bozeman that I know that has an EV pickup, and for him it works fine because he just drives, you know, to and from the radio studios, so it works great. But again, if you're hauling a heifer across the state or you're hauling horses or something, I mean, they had studies of these pickups hauling campers, and they could barely even make it to the next charging station. So what are you going to do, stop every single hour just to sit there and recharge for another 45 minutes or an hour or two? It just doesn't make any sense.
I don't know if you saw that story a couple of years ago. I think it was the Secretary of Energy was trying to show off how great all the infrastructure was for EV vehicles on the East Coast. And she did this couple-day-long trip all down the East Coast, and it turns out she couldn't fuel a vehicle anywhere. They had to go up ahead of everybody. They had to stop all these charging stations to make sure that she had room time when she would get in there. And there was this like poor family that needed to charge a vehicle, but for several hours, like, no, you can't get near the charging vehicles. The Secretary of Energy is coming. We need this whole entire place clear for her.
That's Jennifer Granholm, right? Is that who that was?
I think so.
Yeah, but probably the dumbest person in government in the entire government anywhere. Yeah, that guy, I remember that. That was just a massive flop failure. Incredible.
Well, John, you know, he's kind of like a horse that you got to drag out of the barn. You got to try to figure out a way to get him a little more fired up. He's so reserved. So reserved here. So, hey, quick break here. Do you got to run, or can you stick around for a few more minutes here? Travis Cushman, one thing I want to ask you is these next 2 months, what are you most concerned that the administration might do in the final 2 months before leaving office?
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, we were talking about Kash Patel earlier. Jay in Billings sent us this message. Government gangsters, the deep state, the author, Kash Patel. Yeah, Kash Patel wrote a book about government gangsters. And so he says, yes, make him FBI director and make and have Montana's own Stacy Zinn as his deputy. That's the message from Jay in Billings. We had another message here. Oh, a listener in Jordan also talked about the Government Gangsters book by Kash Patel. We had another message here from Jason in Billings. Is there any, this is a Farm Bureau question, is there anything more on beneficial ownership reporting requirements? Jason, hold that thought, because tomorrow I think Jana Stevens is going to stop in and join us. Jana Stevens is a CPA out of Hardin, Montana, and she is the chair of the Montana Tax Committee for the Farm Bureau, as I understand it. So she's going to give us an update on that front. And Rebecca Colmar was telling us, yeah, a lot of people don't know what this is all about, but it's a really big deal that needs to be done before the end of the year. So we'll give you the update on that one tomorrow. John Jackson, you know, as we talk here with the Deputy General Counsel for the American Farm Bureau Federation, we brought this up with Tim Sheehy, the senator-elect, earlier this hour as well, which is like, hey, it's these next 2 months that has a lot of people on edge. What kind of damage could they do between now and then, right?
And you're seeing it right now. They are taking every pot of money that they have at their disposal right now and chunking it out the window. Just imagine all of your tax dollars right over the railing here, Aaron, you know, billions and billions of dollars to the worst players in the world, to Hamas, to Ukraine, to every place that they can figure out to throw it, because they know even if that money is already authorized, Donald Trump's going to let it sit there. He's not going to be putting it out to these bad players. And if any of that money he does put out is going to be in a tit-for-tat exchange with these bad actors. If you do a thing, we will fund you.
And on the public lands front, Travis Cushman, I mean, I was talking with our head of Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. I mean, there's concerns about potential National Monument designations. Maybe they throw wolves back on the endangered species list. Maybe they make some bad decision on grizzlies. Maybe they put bison on some sort of a listing. So there's a lot of damage they could cause in the next 2 months. What are you hearing are some of the concerns?
So at least on the regulatory side, I am not as worried, only because for a final rule to come out, there first would have had to be a proposed rule. At this point, all the rules that we're really worried about have already been finalized. The administration is savvy enough to have gotten everything they needed to do done by more or less April of May of this past year. About 25 years ago, Congress passed something called the Congressional Review Act, the CRA, that allows new administrations to overturn regs that are done to last, you know, a few months of administration. So as a result, every administration's gotten pretty good at year 3.5. They put out all the most aggressive things right then, so that in the last 6 months at least, they'll be putting out any regulations that can be then easily overturned by the next administration. So on the regulatory side, the things that I'm following have already been done. We're already suing them. We're already challenging them on those. My bigger concerns are things like what the Justice Department might do in defending certain regulations, like the cave in to environmental groups at the last minute. I would point out, though, that, you know, as we look forward to this new administration, Trump administration number one was the most overturned administration in recent history. So when we get these wins, we need to make sure that they are, you know, durable wins. They're done the right way. We're not rushing through things too fast, because a win's only so good as it lasts for, right? And if we're getting overturned all the time, that's no good either.
Yeah. Well, Travis Cushman, great to see you. Thanks for popping up to our studios, and enjoy your time with our friends at Montana Farm Bureau. Just a ton of salt-of-the-earth people from all across the state that are here today.
So, I'm excited. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Good to see you. Let me sneak in a caller here before we run out of time. We've got D in Bozeman on the phone lines. D, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
The same thing as a couple others. I've read the book Government Gangsters by Kash Patel. It's amazing. He should be appointed.
Yeah, wouldn't he be great as an FBI director, somebody to go clean house in there? Yeah.
Yeah, so tell people to read that book. Okay?
All right. Well, and I got to go back and listen to the conversation that I had with Kash Patel. I think that was a couple of months ago or so now. But, yeah, he's just on fire. Thanks for the call, D. Great to hear from you. Yeah, John, you know, imagine if we had an FBI director that was actually going to have the FBI focused on crime. I mean, the FBI plays a big role on our, you know, Indian reservations here in Montana. They're responsible for investigating most of these crimes. And so I imagine those folks have been underfunded or haven't been a priority while, you know, the FBI has been busy, you know, going through Melania Trump's underwear drawers for the last couple of years.
Wait, and just so everybody knows, the main problem with the FBI is that there is far, far, far too much power located in one place. And so what happens if you ever get bad people at the top of an organization like that, you are in trouble because they are way too powerful, okay? And see, I'll tell you, it's some bad news that I'm hearing, some bad rumors that I'm hearing, Aaron. There's supposedly talk out there with this whole government reorg that they would push the DEA underneath Homeland Security. And I'm telling you, that is a monstrously bad idea, because what would you're creating another version of the FBI with so much power in one place. The founders did not want that to happen. They wanted a limited government. We cannot have another massive law enforcement agency that can someday be run by a crooked Democrat.
Interesting. Yeah, very interesting. Well, John, great to see you. Thanks for sidekicking with us here and joining us. I know we had a lot to pack in this hour, but great to see you as always. Follow him on X at PVT Joker US, the Joker, Private Joker US on X. Thanks for being with us. Yeah, lots more to come tomorrow.